No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Baseball Insiders. I am Adam Weintraub, joined today by fan-sided Sam Phelan in Robert Murray's spot, and we are so pumped to talk to you ahead of the All-Star break. This will probably be our final show here on the Baseball Insiders before we break for the weekend, take a breather, and get back into the trade deadline madness. But Sam is here to talk to me about snubs, the Derby, prep for the weekend, what the White Sox plans look like ahead of the deadline and draft, and all that good stuff and more. Sam, thank you so much for joining me, man.
Yeah, of course. This is a very fun time of year for baseball fans. We got so much going on, so much to be excited about, from the futures game to the MLB draft to the trade deadline. The hot stove is upon us here, Adam. So I could not be more excited to break it down with you.
Yeah, we're waiting for the stove to get a little bit hotter, and ideally it does at some point. But for now, we have the fun stuff, the good rewards, the draft picks. And yeah, like you said, the futures game, which I love, and I don't want to forget about that either. And I want to forget about it less than MLB does, because again, it's during the regular season. It's like, oh, yeah. did you want to watch that? Sorry, your actual team is playing. So TiVo won. Do we still have TiVo? I don't think so. And watch the other. But All-Star Weekend, yes, coming up, and we appreciate everybody joining us today. Get your questions in the comments. We will be more than happy to address them and answer them as the show goes on. Robert Murray will be back next week. He and I are sorting out our podcast schedule, so please stay tuned. Turn on your notifications so you know when we're going live. We'll keep everybody posted ahead of time because Robert's going to be boots on the ground in Atlanta for All-Star and for Futures and for Draft. I'm getting there on Monday, so I think Robert and I are going to do a show together on Tuesday, maybe. That sound good? Everybody weigh in the comments. Tell me if you think that plan is bad or good, and we'll see. But join us in the Discord. If you're not there, you can bother Robert and I between shows. All you have to do is hit that join button right below this video. Subscribe to the Moonshot if you have not. Fansided.com's weekly baseball email newsletter, where Robert and the rest of the team break down all the biggest stories, the big leagues, with humor, insight, behind-the-scenes info. You can also read all that and more on fansided.com/baseball-insiders. All right, I want to talk White Sox, of course, with you, Sam, the expert at Southside Showdown. For those of you who don't read, read the site. You should read. But if you're not a reader of the site,
everybody should read. Good
everyone
idea.
Should. Yeah, it's universal. Whether you're a reader of Southside Showdown or not, gotta pick up a book. Gotta stretch those brain muscles. But yeah, you should read the site if you're a White Sox fan who doesn't, or if you just want a White Sox perspective on national news stories. And I'm glad you brought up the futures game, because I think that's as good a spot as any for White Sox fan to weigh in ahead of All-Star Weekend as well. Mm. But want to get your thoughts. Let's talk White Sox draft expectations first, because I definitely want to get your thoughts on that. What are you eyeing? And I know the White Sox have sort of been privy to the quirks and whims of the modern draft lottery system a little bit. So what do you have your eyes on ahead of another pretty important draft?
Yeah, I mean, this White Sox draft, I think White Sox fans have a hard time getting out of their head just where they could be. You lose 121 games in 2024 and somehow end up with the 10th overall pick, thanks to the new CBA and the White Sox being banned from the lottery selection. But I do think this year's draft class falls relatively well for what the White Sox need. if there was a year to be forced to the 10th overall pick, a draft class in 2025 that has a lot of young prep talent, specifically of the shortstop variety, I think is a comfortable spot for the White Sox. So White Sox fans, the White Sox front office, they seem very focused on drafting up the middle. That's what Mike Shirley has sort of indicated is the team's focus moving forward. So JoJo Parker, Billy Carlson, Steele Hall, these are, you know, depending on how that board shakes out in front of them. But also, we know Jerry Reinsdorf. We know that the White Sox like to do things a little bit unorthodox when it comes to the financial side of baseball. So I'm keeping an eye out for a potential under slot at number 10 overall to overslot a high school pitcher possibly at number 44.
Yeah, especially because it does seem like they're going to miss out on that upper echelon of pitchers, although not necessarily the worst thing given who they were able to land in last year's draft. You're starting to see the pieces click. You are starting to see some recent trades pay off in Chicago. So obviously everyone is looking forward to Chris Getz's next step and next big move, who will join Kyle Teal and Chase Mydroff. What are you eyeing ahead of this year's trade deadline? Obviously the biggest name in the rumor mill, but maybe not necessarily the actual mix, is Luis Robert Jr.
Yeah.
But how is your perspective on that shifting as the year goes on?
Well, so I think the White Sox deadline approach has remained pretty steadfast on the pitching front, which is they're going to trade some of these pitchers. Adrian Hauser is going to be dealt. He's done 8 starts. He's been tremendous. He is probably going to net them a pretty, you know, impressive prospect. So will he get the White Sox a top 30 prospect from a team? I definitely think so. I think you could even see Adrian Hauser, depending on how he does before this deadline, he might get you a top 10 prospect from a team with like a little bit of a weaker system. The White Sox have hit gold with Hauser. They're going to move him. They're going to move some of their relief pitchers as well. Steven Wilson has like a 1.6 ERA and 30 appearances this year with 2.5 years of control. He makes a lot of sense to move. But the questions are 2 outfielders, Luis Robert Jr. and Mike Tauchman. And I've sort of flipped on where I think the White Sox are going to go with this. As of today, I expect the White Sox to hold on to Luis Robert Jr. They seem uncomfortable with the idea of just moving him for pennies on the dollar. I think if you're Chris Getz at this point and the demand is so, so low, maybe you try to hold on to Luis Robert and just hope that in August and September, he can look like Luis Robert Jr., give you a reason to pick up his $20 million player team option at the end of the season, and then you can look to trade him in the offseason. Mike Tauchman is a 34-year-old that also has arbitration left, and so the White Sox can tender him a contract, bring him back for one more year in 2026. Chris Getz has talked about the idea of doing that with how many holes this team still needs to fill. Right now, I would say Tauchman probably on the move. Luis Robert Jr. stays. And I think Aaron Civale, who I once thought the White Sox were kind of a shoe-in to flip, will probably remain on the south side as well.
That Hauser coup, though, tells you exactly why it's important to pay attention to these small moves at the margins, especially for a team that is entering a seller's market. We thought last year was sort of a premium, like, all right, if you believe in yourself as a seller, you better declare yourself because there's like 2 dedicated sellers.
Yeah.
This year somehow feels even worse. So the White Sox have a golden opportunity. They already had a golden opportunity, and they've added to it by bringing in a guy like Hauser midstream before even assessing their bullpen options and potentially even holding on to Robert, who makes this comment section confusing because every time Robert Murray and I bring him up, a bunch of people are like, Robert is trash. Robert's overrated. And then Robert Murray reads the comments and he's like, what the hell's going on? But it's Luis Robert Jr. having a bit of a confusing year. And I think you're 100% right. The White Sox are still going to have a golden opportunity in front of them, whether they hold on to him or not. And he probably won't be the story of this deadline, but that won't determine their success.
Well, I think, and Uncle Ted here in the chat actually brings up an interesting point, which I do think we're going to see the White Sox do, which is package some of their players together. If Luis Robert Jr. doesn't have a ton of value on his own, what does Luis Robert Jr. look like to a contending team if he's coming along with Mike Tauchman or Adrian Hauser? As Ted says here as well, the White Sox have Corey Lee sitting in AAA, who has looked pretty good at the major league level this year and just hasn't had an opportunity for big league at-bats with Edgar Caro and Kyle Teal and you know, this youth movement that has come up to the South Side. So I do think there are opportunities to take some of these players the White Sox probably don't want to keep, that they maybe get themselves just a little bit more leverage in a deal to a contending team. Because while Luis Robert Jr., as the chat likes to point out, and White Sox fans are very quick to point out, cannot hit this season whatsoever, there is value to a contender because of the defense and base running that he brings. So maybe it helps sweeten the pot a little bit for a deadline deal.
Let's look forward to the All-Star game and All-Star weekend just a bit now. And I want to stick with the futures game first, because I'm glad you brought that up, because I always look forward to an opportunity to mention the futures game and briefly glossed over it and shouldn't have. The White Sox are sending Noah Schultz and Braden Montgomery, who is another favorite of this chat. People on the Prospect Show often like to ask for weekly updates on how we feel about Braden Montgomery's potential. And I feel like White Sox fans may be in the same bucket. But on the whole, if I'm stepping back, I'm actually, by and large, pretty impressed with what he's been able to put up this year. What are you most excited to get a peek at when the Futures game rolls around on Saturday?
Yeah, I really think it is Braden Montgomery, who has been so promising at times and has just had these really dominant stretches. And what people forget is that this is his first professional season, because he was recovering from an injury all last year with the Red Sox. And seeing how Braden Montgomery looks against some of the higher level players in the minor leagues, like get some of these top 100 prospects that are in Double A, Triple A, are more major league ready, are just knocking on the door, and see if he can perform. That is a really exciting turn for White Sox fans, because as successful as he has been at times, he is still in high A down there in Winston-Salem, and you'd like to see him do it against maybe Double A competition before the end of the season, before you really start to buy into the buzz of him being a well-rounded outfield prospect.
Yeah, we think about, people always asking particulars on how much progress has he made. Last All-Star break, he was on a rolling scooter with his knee in the air, yeah, at the draft, recovering from a devastating injury that, you know, completely changed his trajectory, gave the Red Sox an extra asset, and has now helped add to the White Sox future pool. He didn't feel like a Red Sox from the moment he was drafted. I'm glad it didn't take him long to find a home that made more sense. But this weekend's going to be a great showcase for him. And yes, like Uncle Ted said, Lázaro Montes will be on display this weekend as well, who is kind of the guy I'm most curious to see just from an objective MLB fan perspective. Mm. Every highlight I get thrown in my face is the biggest man I've ever seen hitting the longest home run in the world in the middle of Arkansas. So I don't know what that's going to look like on a big league field at Truist. I think he'll visit the Chop House a time or two, but Braden Montgomery is going to answer. I mean, even if it's five innings, even if it's just a couple of showcase at-bats, I do think it's going to be very interesting to see what he looks like on that field.
Yep. And White Sox fans are looking to see him hit from both sides of the plate, which, like, he's really only done it from the right side with a lot of consistency since turning pro. So for a switch hitter, you'd like to see some of those splits sort of balance out a little bit over the course of this year and next.
I'm going to ask you one more tangential White Sox question too, before we move on to the fun or the angry, depending on how we feel about
Sure.
But yeah, I wanted to, obviously we had to, you know, we couldn't do Monday's show for the immediate Robert Murray reaction to the Nationals shaking up their front office and dugout. But I'd love to get your thoughts, because twofold, you know, Mike Rizzo gone, Dave Martinez gone. In Dave Martinez's place, Miguel Cairo. So first of all, you know, I don't know how surprised you are to see another intern tag placed on Miguel Cairo's shoulders. But second of all, when we're talking about the draft, and we're talking about, it does seem like the top of the draft is probably going to be a collegiate pitcher or Ethan Holliday. I go back and forth. But the team that holds the number one pick just fired their GM. And to be fair, installed a right-hand man and someone who's familiar with the process. Eric Cole and I talked on yesterday's show. I don't buy that their plan is just going to get completely upended by this shakeup, but what are you thinking if you're another team that is picking close to the top of the draft and you see this much of a bombshell dropped? I mean, are you changing your plans? Are you preparing contingencies? Like, how do you change?
So starting with Cairo, not really all that surprised to see Miguel Cairo back in a skipper chair with the team. Honestly, when he filled in as the interim manager for the White Sox back in 2022, as Tony La Russa was fading down the stretch and the team was fading down the stretch of the 2022 season, La Russa stepped aside for September for medical reasons. Medical reasons, as White Sox fans like to say. Miguel Cairo stepped in and was like a raging success. There was a losing streak towards the back end of September, but halfway through the final month of the season, he had the White Sox within 3 games of a playoff spot and actually looking like they might salvage a dead team from the depths of the AL Central. So Miguel Cairo, there was buzz about him maybe being the White Sox full-time manager before they hired Pedro Grifol, which Miguel Cairo might have been a better hire than Pedro Grifol in hindsight. So no, not surprised to see him get this opportunity with the Nationals. I think it's a good fit for Cairo as well. It's just an energy, well-respected guy for a young team that has a lot of young talent that is kind of playing with house money in the second half of 2025. For the Nationals as a whole, my expectation, I would agree with both you and Robert in the sense that this does not completely overhaul the Nationals draft plan. There's a lot of scouts and evaluators who have been doing work on these prospects for years now, and that's not going to change how they feel about their players. But I do think when you look at the front office as a whole, this tells me what the Nationals are thinking at an ownership level. And it tells me that there is a sense of urgency in Washington. There is impatience in Washington. There is this idea that Dave Martinez can win a World Series in his second year as an MLB manager and then go under 500 for 5 consecutive seasons. And they're tired of it. They're ready to win. And because they're so ready to win, I think the Nationals are going to go with Cade Anderson probably, but it will be a college player. I think they want a fast riser, somebody who will be able to come up and supplement this core of Gore, Abrams, Wood, Hassel, House, all these guys that they have in the major leagues right now. So if you're a team picking in that area behind Washington, I don't think you can, change your plans drastically, but just understand what the vibe is within the Nationals organization right now and probably bank on a college arm going number one overall.
Yeah, and everything you're saying sort of screams Cade Anderson to me. And I think it did before the shuffle, it does after. But regardless, if that's what you had your eyes on, if you were trying to figure out which of the many college arms to believe in, it does feel like safest pick and safest timeline right now.
It becomes harder to take a shot, I feel like, when you don't really have a guy calling the shots. So, like, who is taking that shot? Who is responsible if you say that you want to get a little unconventional and, take a Ethan Holliday or a Seth Hernandez or whoever it is, number one overall? There's nobody to be held accountable for that decision right now. So as an organization, I agree, go safer, go more projectable, go quicker to the major leagues. And all of that points to Cade Anderson.
Yeah, and we don't know who the decision maker necessarily is. And that means all eyes on something insane. Like, if they were to take a logic leap, then they'd be roasted for clearing out the decision makers right before the draft.
Yeah.
if they played it safe, now it's harder to roast the pick. It's easy to just say, okay, they knew they needed to make a change and they went standard, best, safest player available. Well, and now
we have some history as well that shows us like that this sort of thing has happened. And it has not affected the way teams have operated in the past. In 2006, the Royals fired their general manager 1 week before the MLB draft when they had the number one overall pick. Dayton Moore was actually hired to come in and be the Royals general manager, but he was still working on the draft for the Tampa Bay Rays all throughout that cycle. And he takes this job a week beforehand. So the Rays and Royals made an agreement that Dayton Moore would not contribute to the Royals selection. They took the in-house selection, which is the consensus pick, which was Luke Hochaver, number one overall. Probably should have gone with something Dayton Moore thought instead of going with Luke Hochaver first overall. But I think that goes to show you that when this has happened in the past, it really has not rocked the boat. And the teams that are doing this sort of thing try to take the consensus number one overall pick if there is one.
Yeah, Hochaver, obviously a mistake. They should have gone with the guy who went second overall. Oh, Greg Reynolds, never mind. Third is the answer.
Bad draft, but what can you do?
Yeah, really wonky draft unless you happen to luck out on a high school arm named Clayton Kershaw. Or I would be satisfied if I had Tim Lincecum on my team too, but it is what it is. All right, let's move on to the fun. I mean, we've been having fun. It's like when I accidentally said everybody should learn to read. It's all been fun, but the All-Star game for me is the crown jewel of the weekend. And what time is the Futures game? That kicks it all off at 4 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday. Again, very aggravating. Then you move on to the draft Sunday night, which is the first three rounds on Sunday. That's a bit of a new format for MLB. We're getting to pick like 105, and then we'll move on to Monday. But then media availability and the home run derby on Monday, game on Tuesday. And we had a number of shuffles last night. We started to see the replacements come on. Junior Caminero for Alex Bregman. Andrew Abbott snuck on there for Yoshinobu Yamamoto. We still have not done that major overhaul late of all the guys who were starting Sunday who just find their way off the roster. So plenty more names are going to make the team in the coming days. But we are now one roster reveal and one early round of replacements through, and Juan Soto, not an all-star. Several massive names, not all-stars. A guy in Chicago who wears blue pinstripes probably has a pretty strong argument, I would say. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to snubs, who is angering you the most right now?
I don't know if it's an individual snub as much as it is like... So I will say right now, Seiya Suzuki is the number one, to me, snub of the all-star game. I believe Ryan Dempster, somebody shared this on Foul Territory. Since 1936, the MLB RBI leader has made the All-Star game every single year besides this year when Seiya Suzuki, with 25 home runs, 77 RBIs for the first place Chicago Cubs, somehow does not make the All-Star team. Absolutely ridiculous and a huge snub. But I think the biggest drop-off from player who did not make the roster to player who did make the roster, right? Because I can look at Seiya Suzuki and say competitive National League outfield / designated hitter was a pretty tight field. And both of his teammates, Kyle Tucker and Pete Crow Armstrong, who made the team, are very deserving in their own right. Why is Julio Rodriguez on this team instead of George Springer? George Springer, 281, 16 home runs, 10 stolen bases, and 886 OPS. George Springer has the second highest OPS plus of his career this year in 2025. He's hitting .433 with a .1250 OPS over his last 16 games. And the Toronto Blue Jays are 13-3 in those games, now taking a 3.5 game lead in the American League East. Toronto has won 10 straight, and there has not been a better Blue Jay this year than George Springer. And somehow he is not on the AL All-Star team. Alejandro Kirk's there. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is there. And Julio Rodriguez with his sub-100 OPS plus is on the team, but we can't find room for George Springer. That one infuriates me.
Yeah, I'm a narrative king when it comes to the All-Star. If you've had a great first half, I'm going to prioritize you over star power. And I think that's where Rodriguez fits in. It just sort of feels like this service of like, got to get the brightest shining stars and the biggest names in the game.
This is the second time for Julio too. Julio had a good year. I think it was 2023. He didn't have a good first half and he made the All-Star team because the game was in Seattle. And so he was named as a replacement at one point and got the All-Star honor. But this is the second time Julio Rodriguez has been an All-Star without, really deserving his All-Star selection.
Yeah, I don't see the comments bringing up Joe Adell. Of course, another deserving name, but Springer has single-handedly, maybe that's not fair on a team with Kirk and Vlad and Addison Barger, but he has been maybe the face of this Blue Jays surge and turnaround. Absolutely. Especially because who owned the four-game Canada Day series sweep over the Yankees? Springer homered like every game. Springer's numbers are comparable to his peak. Springer, and like you said, he's not being squeezed out at a position where it's impossible. You know, somebody had to be on the cutting room floor. No, Julio Rodriguez and his Anthony Volpe like war accruing season could have been on the cutting room floor.
Yep. And I totally agree with you, what you said, narrative building, right? Like when I think of the All-Star game, yes, I think of stats and we have to look at player stats and figure out who is deserving. But I also think of telling the story of the first half of the 2025 Major League Baseball season. Yes. And the Toronto Blue Jays are a story right now. I will say, right, part of the reason that Springer, I think, is left off is because the ballot that goes to the players is sent out over a month ago, right? So like this little hot streak George Springer has been on recently, they don't account for like the last couple of weeks. It goes out a little bit early, but I just don't know how you tell the story of this first half without Seiya Suzuki, without George Springer on the All-Star team. Yeah, Juan Soto, Carlos Rodon, Christopher Sanchez, Joe Adell. These are guys that I think they're statistically are very deserving, but Springer, Suzuki, those two really irk me the most.
Yeah, 100%. You're going to be able to provide 10 to 15 names in the comment section that are going to make me smile and nod and say, yeah, I can see that. Like, sit down, Rafaela. Sure, he's been on a heater lately too, but I think you hit the nail on the head with the two guys who make me scream the most right now. Maybe not everybody feels the same way about telling the story of the first half. And maybe some, I mean, I think it's the same people who get frustrated with the every team needs an all-star thing, which I don't mind at all.
I don't mind it at all. I really don't. I think Kyle Stowers is a really fun story for the Marlins this year and deserving of an all-star selection because of it. But really, we are looking very possibly, Adam, at like a world where the Chicago Cubs win the NL Central and are one of the best teams in the National League, and they have a Japanese-born player hit 45 home runs and driving 130 runs for them and doesn't make the all-star team. Like, that is insane when you zoom out a little bit and look at the macro view of what's going on.
Yeah, it's not like he doesn't play for one of the jewel franchises in Major League Baseball. Like,
right, you know, exactly.
It's not like you know, that shouldn't always factor in, but it is, it's objectively true. You know, this is going to happen every year. I was watching the E60 documentary on Jim Abbott that's about to come out, and I knew he'd obviously had very good years, but I kind of thought of him as a, you know, an amazing story, a solid pitcher. I completely forgotten that in 1991, he put up 7.6 WAR and finished third in the Cy Young race and didn't make the All-Star team. Now, if a one-armed pitcher who is going to finish in the top three in Cy Young can't make the All-Star team, then maybe they've been overlooking the narrative for like 35 plus years. But
yeah,
so it's long been a problem, but it definitely manifests in the two that you called out.
Tale as old as time, man.
Let's get Jim Abbott on the All-Star team this year. What is it?
No. Why not? What, legend selection, Rob. Come on. What are we doing?
It makes more sense than Clayton Kershaw. Sorry. I didn't mean to say that. I do love that Kershaw will be there. It's an exciting wrinkle. And speaking of trying to make things exciting, though, the Home Run Derby may be falling on tough times. I don't know. I'll always care about it more than the dunk contest because the dunk contest is bringing me genuine G League talent at this point in time. Yep. But every year I watch the Home Run Derby and every year I go, I don't know if the format is right. Like, head to head feels better than 10 outs, but head to head is also 2.5 hours. And maybe one of the rounds is 24 versus 23. And then someone sneaks in with 11 homers and Alec Bohm is in the finals. I don't know. It's not perfect. It's better, I think. But this year's field so far incomplete, but it does feel like they're doing some pretty good fan service with Cal Raleigh in there, with O'Neill Cruz not on the All-Star team, but the guy who Paul Skeen said had the best BP sessions he's ever watched. I mean, that feels like someone I'd like to see in the Home Run Derby. Byron Buxton, unconventional pick, but also might be inexplicably incredible at this. Have they done enough to excite you? Format change, participants, you know, all encompassing.
So I think every time I watch the Home Run Derby, I think to myself, they're close. Like, they're really close to capturing the magic, but something about it is just a little bit off. And what I really think it is I want to see the head-to-head format. I think it's masterful. I think it's a great idea. I don't want to see a clock. I want to see 10 outs or 5 outs or whatever it is you do and let guys go head-to-head with one another, because part of the beauty of the Home Run Derby is getting to sit there and just admire, look how far that man hit that baseball. Yes. And watching the broadcast now is sort of a chore. Like, it's hard to track if the balls are actually home runs. A lot of players are going for speed and not necessarily distance. And so there's a lot of wall scraping home runs. And sure, it's nice to see Alec Bohm hit a bunch of wall scraping home runs, but that's not exactly why I tune into the Home Run Derby. So I think they're close. I think, you know, they do get some of these big names, which makes me want to tune in. I think a world of sports betting now also makes me want to tune in because it's a lot more fun to sit there and place, you know, however much money you feel comfortable placing on Cal Raleigh and root for him. But I think there are some more subtle changes they could do to really perfect this thing. Give me outs instead of a timer, keep the head-to-head, and then let's make some sort of threshold where, look, I like Ronald Acuna Jr. Ronald Acuna Jr. might win this thing. I don't need to see a guy who has 9 home runs. Injuries, of course, are the reason he has 9 home runs. I don't need to see a guy who has 9 home runs compete in the home run derby. Let's get Gino Suarez and Kyle Schwarber and some of the home run kings in here.
Yeah, I really laughed the other day because I think Jazz Chisholm said, like, I'd be excited. It might be interesting. I was like, I don't think you got invited, but, you know, feel free to keep commenting.
Yeah, right. Alec Bohm literally had like 11 home runs that one year he made it. And it kind of feels like there's always one or two guys that haven't had huge home run seasons. And I kind of miss the days of just Mark Trumbo, who can't really do anything but hit home runs. But Mark Trumbo is going to be in the Derby and he's going to be fun to watch in the Derby because he'll hit a ball 500 feet.
Yeah, the key point that you brought up is when you can't even really process when home runs are leaving, like they're not going very far, and maybe that one fell. It feels like every year I've watched under the timer system, something has happened after the buzzer, and I've been like, shouldn't that not count? And then the broadcast right. just doesn't mention it because they don't really know, or maybe it's not synced every single season.
Let me make this point too. I think one of the things that makes baseball beautiful as a sport is the idea that you can't run out the clock. It's the idea that there is this slow building tension throughout a game, especially late in a big postseason game, right? Where between every pitch, it just feels like, you know, your insides are melting. And I want to create that in the Home Run Derby. I want to create this feeling of, you know, Cal Raleigh going against O'Neill Cruz and Cal Raleigh stepping up to the plate and he's got 9 outs. He's sitting on 9 outs and he's 2 home runs away from O'Neill Cruz. And every swing he either loses it or he creeps a little bit closer. And that sort of tension, that head-to-head format with the outs where we can sit there and just watch and watch. And like, that is the magic of the Home Run Derby that we've had in the past. And that's what I want to see them recreate. So do 5 outs in the first round. Let's get some of these guys out of here. And then a 10 out finale. Love it.
Yeah, I love it. I want more of what you're describing and less of constant breaks for 6 all-stars to gather around you with a wet towel for your head and a Gatorade because you're just dead after swinging the Jesus out of the bat.
And nobody understands like the bonus time. It's like, I know you got to hit the ball far, but I don't know which balls are 420 and which balls are 480. I can't tell from the snap into each different camera view you do.
Yeah. And you know who else can't tell? Major League Baseball. They don't know. That's the other thing. Like, I don't believe them.
They just get a StatCast reader and throw it up on immediately. They just take the data of whatever they think the projected distance is.
Yeah. They can tell me whatever. It's the same thing. They can tell me whatever they want on the broadcast. They can tell me that home run counts or doesn't. I really don't know. Again, like you said, we are so close, but we are not quite there yet. That has not changed, though, the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game and the futures and now the draft from being the crown jewel weekend pre-All-Star, you know, pre-trade deadline and pre-World Series of the MLB calendar. I'm going to be a sucker for this forever. I can't wait. I can't believe that I still care about this, but I definitely do. I can't believe that I sat here and nodded like, yeah, Kyle Stowers does deserve it. Like,
I'm going to watch every second of the All-Stars trotting out down the baselines and hearing their name called and, you know, saluting. And I'm going to love it. And I'm going to eat it all up because this is what we do.
Notably, while we're watching that, they will be wearing their team jersey as well.
Which they got this one right. Thank you. Finally, right? Yeah. I mean, come on. The magic of seeing, especially when you have a good year, I love going back and looking at the 2010 All-Star Game introductions. And I don't even remember off the top of my head, but you go, oh, the Brewers had 5 All-Stars this year? And you're just watching them go down, being like, man, I remember this Brewers team. They were rocking. And you get that flavor a little bit more with your own uniforms.
Yeah, the 2021 game, I think, was the first where they didn't wear them. And it also should have been the last. And they should have learned everything they needed to know from that game, which was supposed to be in Atlanta, moved to Colorado. They didn't redesign the jerseys to have jack shit to do with Colorado. It was just like red, white, and blue stars. And that should have been the death knell for this idea that never should have happened. Somehow we did it a couple more years, and finally we're back where we should have been all along.
Yep. Finally.
Well, Sam, I will be watching every second, just like you will be. I'm sure our commenters will be as well. Everyone, stay tuned for updates on schedule next week. Eric Cole and I are going to try to do the draft recap, futures game recap prospect show on Tuesday. I think Robert and I are going to do a show on Tuesday as well from Atlanta. Maybe Eric will go on Monday instead, and Robert and I will be Tuesday. We're not gonna, maybe we'll overload a day. Maybe we'll be more normal. But everybody, stay tuned for that. We'll keep everybody posted. And I want to thank Sam Phelan so much again for pinch hitting today. Sam, where can the people find you, and what do you got to plug?
Well, go check out Southside Showdown. Like you said, Southside Showdown, all of the White Sox perspective content. It's an interesting time to be a White Sox fan. You might look at them and say, hey, not competitive. There's fun times ahead on the South Side. So we've got you covered over there. Twitter at Sam_Phelan as well. You see it down there below me.
Yes. For the readers among you, please go ahead and head to Southside Showdown, of course. For the non-readers, get after it, guys. There's so much good stuff to read out there. We will see you again on the show next week. Again, my thanks to Sam Phelan for hanging out, All-Star break, plenty more content headed your way. Subscribe, join, plenty of shorts coming from All-Star weekend, a few live podcasts, and then we'll be back to wrap it all up and recap it. Thanks everybody again for joining us on YouTube or your favorite podcast platforms. Till next time, take care.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.